Good morning, friends. It's Friday with Jim here at Coast Community Radio. And I'm happy to have with us our guest today, Denise Loftin from CREST, the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force. And thanks for coming over, Denise.
Yeah, thank you for the invite. I'm happy to be here.
I'll have to explain that I actually do contract work with CREST. That shouldn't influence our interview, but that means I'm not going to really pitch you any tough questions. You know, it's going to be kind of a softball type interview.
That sounds good.
Before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and where'd you grow up and go to school and stuff?
Oh, okay. I actually grew up in California, in Southern California, but I did my undergrad work in Walla Walla, Washington, at Walla Walla College, and fell in love with the Northwest when I was there. And then I spent a bit of time traveling. I served in the Peace Corps in the Philippines on an island nation. I was about as far from the ocean as you can get. I worked in the highlands and did a lot of environmental education. And then I came back home and I went to graduate school back in Washington, D.C. at Johns Hopkins in a program around a social change and development. I wanted to work with communities around environmental issues and finding ways that we could use environmental issues to help with community development in lots of different ways, whether that means building more trust within communities or implementing projects that assist communities with issues that they may have, or even assisting with economic development within communities. And I'm very fortunate, really, to be able to be doing work that's very much like that at CREST, and to be able to work around the issue of restoration in the Columbia River.
How long have you been at CREST?
I've been at CREST 2 years, and prior to that, I worked down in Tillamook. I was the Tillamook Bay Watershed Council coordinator for 8 years, so I've been on the Oregon coast for 10. This year is 10 years.
Why don't you explain a little bit about CREST and how did it come about? How are you funded, and what do you do?
Okay, so CREST began in 1974. I think it's an interesting story that the local governments around the mouth of the Columbia River, both on the Washington side and the Oregon side, realized that they were making land use decisions and land use planning decisions in the estuary and around the estuary without a lot of information about the river, about the estuary. And so they came together to form the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force to start to gather information and to begin to maybe to coordinate those jurisdictions as they looked at land use planning. And so we continue to work with local jurisdictions on both sides of the river, both counties and cities. On the Washington side, we work with Wakayakum County, the city of Ilwaco, Port of Ilwaco. And on the Oregon side, we work with Clatsop County, all of the cities in Clatsop County and the Port of Astoria. And so from there was a congressional line item in the appropriations budget in the 80s that created a program for the Columbia River Estuary to gather data. And so there's a lot of information from in the mid-70s to very early 80s. And then after that, we continued to do land use planning. And then when the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds and the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board was formed in order to address threatened and endangered salmon throughout Oregon, CREST began to get involved. We were uniquely positioned to get involved in restoration work. And we continue to do that today. Today we have funding from Bonneville Power Administration, and they fund our really large restoration projects that we do on the Columbia River. And those projects are really focused on creating juvenile habitat for salmonids. There's 13 threatened or endangered species, salmonid species on the Columbia River. And then we also continue to do land use planning and assist local jurisdictions, particularly a lot of them around natural resource issues if they have questions. We also act as the land use planner. We have a coastal planner in our office. He is the planner for the city of Ilwaco. So it just depends on what the local jurisdictions need, and we try to help them meet those needs as we can.
How did it come about that the Bonneville Power Administration, BPA, took it upon themselves to start funding this kind of work?
So that came from a federal biological opinion. So there were some folks who felt that Bonneville maybe needed to be paying a little more attention to threatened and endangered species because of the dams.
Mm-hmm.
They've invested for years in habitat restoration above the dams because there was an understanding that that habitat would be key because it would be where the fish were headed in order to spawn. But the research around the importance of the estuary is still kind of catching up. And the awareness within the scientific community about the importance of the estuary is a little bit newer, fresher. And so what happened was that the federal biological opinion has also directed BPA to begin to also do work in the estuary. And BPA looks at the estuary in their boundaries for the estuary go from the Bonneville Dam to the mouth of the Columbia River. And so they are investing fish and wildlife dollars into that program and doing restoration both above and below the dam. And CREST has been doing work for BPA for a number of years, doing restoration projects. It was just we didn't have a direct contract with them. We received those funds through other organizations that helped BPA get those funds to different folks who could do the work. And then in, I believe 2010, 2011 was when we secured our first contract with BPA. And since then, we put anywhere between 3 to 5 fish enhancement projects on the ground every year, usually in the summer in the in-water work period. We have a couple projects happening now and hopefully another one that's going to be implemented this fall, too.
Yeah, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, I guess, I attended a 3-day workshop here at the Liberty Theater with a whole lot of really smart science people who had been studying the estuary from different perspectives. I know that you spoke at that. How did that workshop, which I found extremely valuable, how did that come about?
So that conference happens every other year in even years, usually in May, and it is held at the Liberty. And it's called the Columbia River Estuary Workshop. And you're right, it's about 3 days of a whole lot of download of information from really smart scientists. And that conference has been in place for a while now. It's been happening regularly. And I think, you know, it came from this understanding that the science around the estuary was really growing, mm-hmm. and the amount of research that's been happening is expanding. And, you know, what's interesting, I think, with research and with scientific study is, you know, you get an initial question, right? And you go out and you do the research to answer that question. And you may get an answer, but then you get all these other questions that then you need to go out and answer. Mm-hmm. And so it's like this really interesting journey from one point to the next. And so over time, that conference has really expanded. I was on the committee that helped plan that, and we received so many applications to speak that we had to like figure out if folks were willing to do posters, and we actually expanded the timeline for the conference. I believe we had 52 applications for speakers that we wanted to fit as many of them in as we could. And so you know, you were there, so you know, you heard there was lots of really great information from all different angles about the estuary. Because I think the other thing that we're learning as we go is, you know, we know such a small amount. There's so much more to learn. And as time goes on, things that we think we knew were assumptions that we're not necessarily totally correct. And so, and that's really one of the interesting things I think about restoration is it's about doing the best practices for what we know right now and then continuing to learn from that work. You know, so CREST puts a project on the ground and then we do monitoring, and that monitoring then helps inform the project that we do the next year and the year after that. So we're creating really a system of doing, learning, and then trying to put those lessons that we've learned into practice in what we're doing the next time.
You know, one of the parts of scientific thought really involves challenging your assumptions.
Yes.
And it sounds to me like one of the things that you do is challenge assumptions previously made about the estuary with the idea of expanding our knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Now, I wonder if you'd take the time to walk us through one of your restoration projects. I know that when the white man first came here and started settling this area, one of the first things they started doing was building dikes and cutting off valuable habitat. So take it from there.
Okay. we have a few different projects that have either occurred. And we have one that's occurring right now out at Carlson Island, and another one that's going to occur up the Klatskanai River later this year. But I think I'll talk about Otter Point. It's a project that's completed, and it's one that if folks are interested in viewing it, they can go out and look at it because it's out at the national park. It's out at Lewis and Clark. And that project is a really interesting one. It's one that took multiple years to plan, because it was very complicated. So I believe in 2005 or 2006, the park acquired some additional property beyond their original boundaries. And so they acquired this pasture land that was right adjacent to the Lewis and Clark River that was really a pasture that was diked, that had a federal levee that protected it from the river. And because it was in their hands, we have a great partnership with the park because these restoration projects meet multiple goals. They meet goals for CREST around habitat restoration, but they also meet goals for the park because the park wants to restore as much of their landscape to something that would be close to what Lewis and Clark saw when they got here. And one of the things they talk about in their journals, you know, they talk about, you know, how they had to put the fort upland, right? And they're like, and it was a quagmire down by the river. Well, right now we have a lot of pasture and it doesn't look much like a quagmire. And so our goal was to put the quagmire back.
Yeah.
both for historical reasons, but also because quagmires are really good for juvenile fish.
Mm-hmm.
For lots of different reasons, both for cover and places to rear and really good food web connections that provides a lot of food for juveniles who need to be eating a lot because they're growing really fast. So we decided we were going to go in there. We were going to build a new cross levee so that we would still protect neighboring land and that land wouldn't flood. But we were going to breach the old levee in a few places and build about 33 acres of new wetland, or wetland that was wetland but was now pasture. And the project got really complicated really quickly because of Hurricane Katrina. The Army Corps has new standards for when you are working on federal levees. There's a very time-consuming and very detail-oriented process that you have to go through, and your plans for the new cross levee, they had to go all the way to Washington, D.C., to the general at the very top of the Army Corps Engineers, and he had to sign off on that levee, which means that multiple eyes at Army Corps had to look at the levee. So that took a bunch of time And so this Otter Point probably took 2 years to construct with actually equipment on the ground. But for both planning and implementation purposes, it was probably a 5-year project.
Hmm.
But in 2012, we finished the levee. It's a really big levee. It protects fields. It protects the airport in Warrenton. And it allowed us to breach the old levee in 5 locations. And in September of 2012, we were able to stand on the new levee and watch these 33 acres be filled with water, wetlands that had not been wet in over 100 years. And for someone like me, who this is what I do, but I do it because I really believe in the work, it was a really special day. To be like, oh, look at this. This is, you know, this land is coming back. And because we did the construction over 2 years, we'd gone into that, what became that wetland, and had scraped down a lot of the dredge material that had been placed there and reconfigured the topography so that it was a little bit lower so that the water could get to it. The National Park Service, we'd planted like 45,000 plants. But what we realized is because we dug down, there's this entire native seed bank of native plants that are, it's just waiting to be uncovered. All of these plants came back. It's been, that project, I think, is really special. The other thing that was interesting is the Army Corps process that we went through. We were the first organization to do this type of work with a levee and have to go through this process where it goes to Washington, D.C. for the Portland District. So it was really a learning experience both for the Army Corps and for us. So for lots of reasons, I think that the Otter Point project is a really special one. And if folks are out at Lewis and Clark, it's a nice walk. The levee's pretty long, and my program manager likes to joke. He's like, you know, the Army Corps application that we had to do for that levee, if you laid the papers side by side, they'd basically be the length of the levee. So it's a really thick stack of paper, and it's a really big, very secure. It's probably, we like to joke and say it's the best, most strongest, biggest levee in Clatsop County at this point.
Well, friends, we're Friday here at Coast Community Radio, and I'm your host, Jim Wilkins. We're visiting with Denise Lofton from CREST, the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force, and we're talking about various kind of things. Now, I had a chance to get involved with the CREST project on Liberty Lane, mm-hmm. where in the fill that was put in to build the road down to where Mertz is now, cut off about a 7-acre chunk of habitat, and CREST went out for bid and opened that up. And I went out there the day after it was opened up, and there was already fish coming mm-hmm. through the new culvert, and going in there and swimming around, as fish will do oftentimes. And so that was pretty impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't quite figure out, how did those fish know it was time to come swim around in there? It's like they were kind of outside waiting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they're working on it, going to open it up here pretty soon.
Yeah, well, and that project's really great, you know, because it's so close to the main stem of the Columbia. The mm-hmm. Columbia's right there. And that culvert is a really large one compared to what was there. What was there was pretty small, you know.
Yeah, and it was the wrong elevation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we put in a great big, 10 or 12-foot culvert. And because we did that, you know, because of the tides.
Mm-hmm.
And so it allows the water to move slowly in and slowly out. And so fish don't have to work very hard to swim in there. So it's really good, yeah.
You know, one of the critical things in these habitat restoration projects is the elevation of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that with climate change happening, that it seems like the water level might rise.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys kind of thought about that, and what do you anticipate the effects of that will be?
When we plan our projects, we are not necessarily taking climate change into account specifically. Like, say, when we if we were to do our hydrological modeling, we do take into account weather. We take into account, you know, 100-year storms and what might happen, because when we model a project, we need to know, like, where's all the water going to go and those kinds of things. But I think the perspective that we've taken around sea level rise and climate change is building wetlands or restoring wetlands, opening wetlands up, is allowing for more capacity for more water. So, you know, if the models are showing that there's going to be more water, maybe a higher tides, or, you know, more water moving in and out with the tides, having additional places for it to go will help, because, you know, the more space that it has to spread out in, it won't rise as quickly, right? Because there's more room for it to be dispersed across. And so that's kind of how we choose to address it. And it's not really, like I'd said, it's not really like a goal, a specific one that we have. It's more like, this is an additional benefit that comes from the work that we're already doing for other reasons, you know, because building habitat, restoring habitat is key for juvenile salmon. It's nice when it, you know, these projects, and my perspective on these projects is really that they need to be wins for everyone who's involved. So whoever the stakeholders are, they all need to feel like that it's meeting a need or it's meeting a goal. And because I really think that in watershed restoration, that's the way we can only get this work done, with partnerships and mm-hmm. with trust. And so making sure that everyone is getting their needs met is really important. And so I'm pleased that, you know, we're building more wetland capacity, and over time that may be very helpful for our community.
I know you mentioned that you came up here from Tillamook County. I'm curious, you know, I'm really familiar with what's going on in this estuary. Mm-hmm. Is the same kind of thing going on down there?
It is.
Cool.
It is, yeah. And it's, you know, Tillamook's interesting. It's got a little bit more ag going on than Clatsop. And the communities, they're a little bit different, but in terms of watershed restoration, there's a lot of similarities. You know, it's about partnerships, and there are good partnerships in place down there, just like there are here. Hmm. There's large-scale restoration occurring. There's an organization that's called the Tillamook Estuaries Partnership, and they are a nonprofit organization, not a council of governments like CREST is, but they're a little bit of a larger organization. So there's good capacity there, in addition to the watershed councils, and in that it's similar to Clatsop County, you know, where there's a lot of folks focused on restoring the rivers and the estuaries in Tillamook County too.
You know, CREST is an interesting organization. You've got a really kind of a good crew of sharp people over there. I wonder whether you could talk a little bit about the structure of CREST and some of your personnel and the jobs that they do.
Sure. Well, I think before I start with that, I will just say the CREST staff are a tremendous group of people, and I feel really fortunate to be able to work with them. Talented and smart and really, really dedicated. CREST, like I just mentioned, we're actually, you know, a council of governments. So we have a council, and I'm kind of starting from the very top. And that council is made up of representatives from all of the different local governments who are members of CREST.
And well, I have to tell you that I was, when I was on the Astoria City Council, I was a member of that.
Okay, yeah. So, and they kind of provide, you know, kind of a board level of oversight for the organization.
Okay.
And then underneath that, I'm the director. And then Matt Van Ness is the restoration program manager. So he oversees the BPA contract. And under him, there's, three folks who are actually implementing restoration projects. Two of them are based here in Astoria, and one of them is Madeline and Sam.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Tom is based in Portland, because while we do a lot of our work down here, closer to the mouth, we do some work a little further upstream. And then we're very fortunate to be working with the Army Corps on some big, large-scale, some Army Corps-funded restoration work. And so we have an additional staff member in Portland. His name is Justin, and he works on those contracts. And he also assists with land use planning. We have a coastal planner. His name is Ryan, and he does lots of planning work. He is the planner for the city of Ilwaco. We're doing the shoreline master program update for Wakayakum County. Justin's working on that. So lots of different things. And then we have a monitoring crew. There's three people on the monitoring crew. They go out and look at our projects and try to figure out, you know, fish are using them. We know fish are using them. Where are the fish from? It's really important that we show that the fish that are using it aren't just fish from the estuary, but they're actually from above Bonneville. And we have been showing that. And then they check out things like vegetation and, you know, what's happening with sediment and how our channels changing and lots of different parameters. And so that's April, Jason, and Narayan. And then the watershed councils are based at Crest, and so we have the watershed council coordinator, Jesse, who's also with us. And then there's the financial folks. Yeah.
The financial folks.
Yeah. Last, but certainly not least.
So what projects are you looking to get funding for and get started, projects that aren't active yet, but you're anticipating doing?
Getting kind of moving forward with. We have, you know, the 8th Street Dam project over in Warrenton.
Mm-hmm.
The funding for that is secure, but, you know, we're in the early stages of design for that project. And we're pretty excited about that one. We're actually starting to chat about maybe doing some culvert replacement work over in Wakayakum County,
mm-hmm.
both to assist the county with some culverts that need replacement. And so we can help bring some fish passage money to bear on that. So meet, like I talked about earlier, different needs. So the county's needs for their roads, and that, much like Liberty Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And then also be able to open up some additional habitat. And we've done two projects out on Savi Island on ODFW land out there. We're doing the second project right now, and we've got a third one coming up next summer. So those are some of the ones we're working on.
You mentioned the 8th Street Dam. I assume the attention there is to remove it.
It is.
And once the dam's removed, is the purpose of that to get salmon going up the river again?
Yes.
Yeah. Did the salmon... This is something people ask me, and I'm not sure, but salmon used to go all the way up to Cullaby Lake?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah. We've, back in the past, late 90s, early 2000s, we would find coho up in Cullaby Creek.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So the goal is, you know, it's habitat that's there. So the goal is to open it up. And the structure needs to come out. It's old.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is definitely a project where we're working towards win-win-win with all the stakeholders.
I have a question, Denise, that's come in here. The question is, how about Jeffers Gardens?
How about Jeffers Gardens in terms of work down there?
That's the question.
Roll the dikes.
Well, there's, you know, this is the thing, is our work is purely voluntary. So, you know, there have to be landowners who are interested and agreeable, and we do the modeling to make sure that our projects don't impact adjacent landowners. And so all of those pieces need to be in place for us to take on projects. We're non-regulatory, and so we work with folks who are interested in working with us.
Well, we've just got a brief amount of time here, about 1 minute, Terry, is that correct? 1 minute. So you have 1 minute to wrap up this 30-minute conversation, Denise.
Oh, well, Jim, first let me say thank you for inviting me. This has been great. And I think the message that I've been trying to leave with folks whenever I've been kind of talking about CREST is that estuary restoration really works. You know, we are building new habitat. We're seeing the benefits of that. But it also is, I think, important for the community, both the people aspect and the economic development that we bring in terms of jobs and that type of thing.